Here you go. All right. Good morning. We'll call to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, July 19th, 2016, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on our agenda is always public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. I do have two requests, both regarding the easement across the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. If the two of you are okay with it, I'd ask that you just speak to us when we get to that point in the agenda. If there's anybody else who'd like to address something, any topic on today's agenda, now's the time. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to departmental reports. We've got Community Services Quarterly Report. Carl Webb. Carl, all these people came just to see you.
I'm here. There's something else they'd like to talk about. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll start talking about our general assistance program. You have the numbers there. For single household cases, we assisted 27 individuals, and we're looking at the period from April 2016 to June 2016. And we assisted 16 families for a total of 43 for the quarter. And you have our year-to-date numbers there. For denials, we had 215 individuals that we were unable to assist that we referred on to other agencies. And we had 8 individuals that applied but did not return for whatever reason. You have the figures there as far as how much assistance was provided for rent, $13,845.64. Utilities was $564.10. And then transportation burial was the $6,441.50. I did include in the report the information regarding the Crestview Mobile Home relocation assistance. Today we had assisted 3 individuals or 3 families for the $2,403.50 total.
Do we have anything pending? Do we have people who have come in for an initial visit who haven't come back?
Yes. I believe it's around 6 or 7 pending applications right now.
Okay.
Is where we're sitting. Asset, we did, the asset administrative team worked to update the policies and the procedures as well as the 2080 agreement, which I think Deb has brought to you guys already. For the region, I did a lot of work on contracting. By the time it's all said and done, we'll have about 50 entities that we've contracted with. The employment committee, I have information there about that committee that was appointed by the governing board. It consists of 3 governing board members as well as 3 administrative team members. And we're looking at trying to see if there's a way to standardize policies for staff who are, their salaries are funded by the region, as well as we'll be taking a look at salaries and is there a way to try and standardize that.
How many employees do we have fully funded by the region?
I believe there are 5 individuals within our office that we have statement of understandings for. And it may be that it's a portion of their salary that's funded by the region.
Right.
2 that are fully.
2 that are fully funded and 3 others that.
Yep. We have spent some time through the quarter meeting with the sheriff's office as well as with Optime, like services, talking about the jail diversion service that Optime provides, as well as the service coordination position that is going to be provided through our office. As you're aware, I believe we had hired for that service coordinator, and she ended up resigning at the end of June. So we are we posted for that position. It closed on last Friday, and so we're in the process of identifying those candidates that we're going to be setting up interviews with.
One caller, if I can interrupt just a minute. As you are aware, NACO, the National Association of Counties, has the Stepping Up program that Story County has acknowledged, and I have been serving as someone the representative amongst the Iowa counties. Blackhawk County has kind of taken the lead in this particular area. we've only had one, meeting to kind of find out what individual counties are doing. Would it be appropriate for me to put you or someone as another contact person so that if there's other additional information that's coming down the pipe, that we could help kind of coordinate? I know that, while next week when I'm at the national conference, I will be meeting with them, and I imagine I'll hear more about what's happening there from the NACO perspective. But I want to make sure that we had enough other bodies to stay on top of some of the things that are coming down, particularly if there could be some possible grant dollars or other funding things that would help us do more of an outreach.
Yeah, definitely. And I believe I have given my contact information. I don't remember the lady's name in Washington that originally there was that conference call.
Right.
And I participated in that as well as the service coordinator that we had hired. So I think she has my information, but if you want to make sure that'd be great.
Well, I guess I'm thinking more or less from the Iowa group, the coalition in Iowa, the various counties that are involved in. And we're reaching out, and so if we do have other meetings, we want to make sure we bring the necessary representatives from the member counties if they can give us additional updates in terms of what's happening at the county level.
You bet. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
We do have a service coordinator in our office who's been participating in organizing the mental health fair that's going to be taking place in September. That's been, a really nice collaboration with several mental health agencies to get that organized. And I believe it will be held on September 13th on the campus at Iowa State. So they've got a speaker lined up to come in and talk. We'll have different vendors in that there. So I'm looking forward to that. The region is sponsoring a training coming up on September 15th and 16th called 5-Star Quality Measures and Outcomes Defined with Derek DeFrance. We are opening that up to all providers, interested individuals within the region, as well as part of Iowa region. We've teamed together to offer that. Looking forward to that. Also, I worked when the fire had occurred in Ames at the 301 South 4th Street, I worked with Ira Leval to have available therapy services should anybody affected by that fire need that. I did check in recently with Ira Leval, and there wasn't any request for that service, but it was available should anybody have needed it. And then something new, too, that we're getting into here is we've had an administrative team member, Patty Tribal Leads. She was trained to be able to offer trauma-informed care, and we're setting up some local trainings for our regional staff to become trained on that, as well as I think she's going to open that up to providers at some point. For our general assistance for the community services office, we did participate in the May 10th informational meeting that was held for Crestview residents, and then after that meeting is when we started to take applications for assistance. So we continue to work on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Before you give it to Eric, you mentioned earlier on contracts we have about 50 entities. Not that I'm wanting to point fingers, but in the collaboration with the community service groups, are you hearing anything regarding delay in payments and things like that now that the managed care programs are basically up and running? I'm hearing from other supervisors in their areas that this is continuing to be an ongoing concern, and yet historically we know that payments sometimes lag anywhere between 30, 60, and 90 days out. But in this case, are you hearing anything that's out of the norm?
We are hearing that from various providers. Deb Childress had organized a meeting for providers to come together and talk about managed care and just what's working, what's not working. And one of the themes I think that's carrying through is difficulties with the billing. And Erin could maybe speak to that a little bit as far as she does the case management billing for our case management program. But yeah, it's something that we're hearing from various places. I think providers have had to increase their staff to be able to just work through the billing process and do the reconciliation and everything.
Thank you.
That's really been the common theme. I was at the meeting the last time, and it's the administrative time that it takes just to even call to get prior authorizations, or even once they've been denied billing to figure out, you know, what the problem is and how the hours they're claiming it's taking, and some of the MCOs will pay for certain things, and some of them will pay for other things, and so it's just. I think the biggest frustrating thing for the hospital, for Mary Greeley, is the approval that they need to get to bring people inpatient for, you know, suicidal ideation and things like that. And they have people that meet all of their criteria that are not getting approved for payment. So there's some serious. So that meeting, I think, is very helpful because they're going to organize, you know, what their barriers are and what. The difficulties are, and hopefully be able to go to the right person to fix those things.
Mm-hmm. So. My understanding is the minutes from the meetings have been shared with our local legislators as
yes.
well.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm here today to give you the last case management quarterly report. So basically what's on here is just kind of a summary of what we did the last 3 months there. We transferred out a total of 249 consumers in basically 3 to 4 months. So throughout April, we worked on United Healthcare. Those folks that had chosen them for their MCO went to them. And then in May, we started to visit about our viability as an agency to be able to continue to do the case management. So we worked on, and if we were going to do that, it would have been for the AmeriHealth Caritas members. They were the one MCO that was contracting with agencies such as ours to continue to provide those services. So we transferred out the folks that had chosen AmeriGroup. That was somewhere around 79 people. And then kind of hung on to those AmeriHealth folks to make sure if we were able to continue that we would be able to, you know, still be their case manager that they've had for years. So that did not work out for us. And May 17th is about when we decided that that was not going to occur. So then we had 6 weeks to transfer out 114 people, which proved to be AmeriHealth. The agencies that we worked with Polk County. So we gave our consumers the choice of the Polk County agencies. So your Community Support Advocates, Link, Child Serve, Easter Seals, and then also Department of Human Services has a case management unit out of Marshalltown. So we did have about a dozen or so folks go there. And then Boone County didn't want to get a lot of the folks because they didn't have enough staff to be able to take a lot on, but we were able to transfer some to them as well. Those agencies worked with us super well to make sure, you know, we got them all the paperwork and the things that they needed to do to be able to pick up and work with people. And though we had a fair amount of people that had discharge dates of 630, so it kind of went down to the wire, but I think we did okay. And, you know, I haven't gotten a whole lot of phone calls from our consumers or our families or anything. So I think that's a good sign. I think that means that they've figured out, you know, who they need to work with and that they don't, you know, need to call us to find that out. So I feel like we did a pretty good job of making sure everybody knew who they were going to. And so that's kind of where we're at. I am resolving billing issues and things like that still right now. I just don't call on the way over. I just billed for everything. So we're at least, it's all sent away, and we'll see what we get paid for and mm-hmm. how much.
And what's the storage requirements of files and information? We've got to hang on to that for X number
7 years.
For 7 years.
Okay. Yes. And we have full, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff.
What's encouraging to me when you mentioned the transfer of people to Polk County, and that you're not hearing where there is a major issue. Historically, new people coming into the system because Polk County, being one of the larger counties in the state with the mental health provider network, oftentimes had a long waiting list. And so I was really concerned as to, with the new people coming in, is whether or not they were going to be able to receive timely service and so forth. So if you've not heard some issues, that's an encouraging sign. But I do think that we need to monitor that a little bit. As you know, and this will probably be addressed at a later time, but Polk County is always asking for additional funding to meet their needs. You know, when we had the mental health risk pool dollars when I was serving in that capacity, you know, we had about $11 million to give to all 99 counties that requested it, but $8 million of it went to Polk County. So it just kind of shows the enormity of the population that receives mental health services in that particular area. And yet, at that time, there was a lot of discussion about why they needed those dollars was because of waiting lists and not and wanting to serve. So I appreciate all of your effort and all your work in continuing to work with the clients. And I don't know if you will at a later time or if we thought about some type of follow-up communication or survey, just so that they know locally that they've got another resource that they can still come to us and see if things are working out. I think that outreach is a kind of a comfort level, particularly for a lot of the people that we've served in the past, and that if we could stay in touch after a certain period of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is Veteran Affairs Quarterly Report, Brett McClain. Brett, I can promise none of these people came for you.
I surely hope not. All right. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brett.
The board has a copy of pretty much my whole quarterly report. A couple things I wanted to add to that. This is my first quarterly with Barney Chitty on board here as the Board of Supervisors, so wanted to welcome you aboard, and the commission is looking forward to working with you as well as Rick and with Wayne there.
Thank you.
Also today we received a $10,000, which is an annual appropriation from the state legislators. It's $1 million appropriation. Each county gets 10, and the state VA office gets 10. So I received that today, and it's been given to Lucy already. So, and then also I wanted to thank the board for appointing a couple of fine commissioners for gender balance now. Jennifer Polk came on board July 1, and Amy Rosenberg. Jennifer's a captain in the National Guard, and Amy's a Navy veteran. So, the kind of our idea behind, you know, having five is and they all live in different communities, is the outreach that we're going to be able to do now, and as well as being gender balanced. So that was kind of our two main issues, and Jennifer's going to be a real plus because she works for the federal VA, so she's going to really be able to help me out a lot. Going into the quarterly report, this is April through June, seeing three veterans that came in for rent assistance, totaling $1,100. One veteran came in for dental assistance, that was $80. And they had a family, a veteran's family come in for burial assistance, was $1,841. Total of county assistance was $3,021 for those five veterans. The commission's vision is to ensure that Story County veterans receive timely access to the highest quality benefits and services we can assist with because they have earned them through their sacrifice and service to our nation. You know, I really feel blessed in being able to be the person for the county that they, you know, I get a visit with the veterans. Every day is Veterans Day for me, kind of. And some of these veterans, they come in and I think sometimes they have one shot with them. You know, take them several years to come to the office. Some are in dire straits. Some are just coming in to check on the benefits. And they weren't sure what they earned even going back as far as World War II, you know, for the first time. The last quarter, I've seen 52 World War II veterans. These are folks that served between 1941 and 46, coming in, some of them, for the first time, checking on benefits. Of course, benefits have changed a lot since World War II. A lot of them, they're getting up there in age, and they're kind of needing some help with medical and those kind of things. Korea, seeing 29 Korea veterans. They served from 50 to 55. And then the biggest group is Vietnam veterans, 73. They served, of course, from 61 to 75. A lot of those men and women are coming in. They're kind of entering retirement age or newly retired and those kind of things. So they got time on their hands. They can come in and check on their benefits. Persian Gulf, seen 28 that served during Persian Gulf. And, of course, that started August 2nd, 1990, and it hasn't closed yet. It's still an open date. Cold War and peacetime, 23. 21 from OIF, OEF, and OND. And let me explain what that means. It's just a little confusing. Iraq is OIF. And that's they served in Iraq from 03 to 10. OEF is Afghanistan. And that's if they served 2001 to present. And then OND is if they served in Iraq after August 30th of 2010. Seeing 25 surviving spouses. Not every surviving spouse am I able to get benefits for. So I need to visit with a lot of them to figure out who I can get benefits for. So I see a lot of surviving spouses when I do nursing home assisted living business. So a total of 251 veterans and surviving spouses for the quarter. Did a little bit of outreach. May 10th, had a booth at the Senior Expo that was at the Quality Inn. Seen 26 veterans there, which was kind of nice because I could tell them about the event we were having the very next day, which was the Veterans Appreciation Day at Van Shell Park. We've seen 62. And it was a rainy day like it is today. So I'm really hoping for a better turnout, but the weather just wasn't helping us much. And then also seeing several, once a week or so I try to get in nursing homes and assisted living. Actually, I get more than what I can even see. So they end up rolling back to the next week. Another sheet that I gave the board this morning was kind of, it's based on money that comes into the county through veterans and surviving spouses. And when I started in 1999, those benefits was $3.9 million was going to veterans. And they tell us that that money rolls over seven times. And in 2003, we were able to increase that by about $2.6 million to $6.5 million. 2007, increased it again, $2.7 million to, by $2.7 million for $9.2. And in 2011, which really had a big increase there, $16.3 million. And kind of what happened there with Agent Orange, they added three presumptive diagnoses, and that's Parkinson's disease, ischemic heart disease, and hairy cell leukemia. So that was kind of the big surge there. And then in 2013, we were at $19.4 million. And 2015, which is the latest data that I have, was $21.8 million. So I'll just kind of give the board some numbers there. Why we do federal benefits and why we do outreach to bring those kind of dollars in. So I hope they spend them in Story County.
Seven times.
Yeah.
Brent, we appreciate the work you do. I'm excited about your new commission. I'm glad to hear that that you think it is a nice balance of people, and we sure appreciate the work you do.
And also, Aaron Rewertz says we've been doing some training since. Well, as you can tell, she's been pretty busy in June, but we've been doing like some weekly training and getting her kind of up to speed.
Good. Well, I like the situation you're in now. I like where your office. I like the support that we're able to provide for you, and just love the job you do. So thanks, Brett.
All right. Yep. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Next item is consideration of minutes from July 12th.
Move approval. Second.
Any additions, corrections, notations? Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed, Board.
Move approval as listed.
Second.
A motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consent agenda, no additions.
Move approval.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Acknowledge receipt of 2016 Urban Renewal Area Project applications. Leanne Martin. Good morning, Leanne.
Yep. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Today is the opportunity for the board to set the schedule for the Urban Renewal Area Plan projects. This is what annually the board supervisors puts out for applications to be submitted by jurisdictions, cities, school districts for different, I would call them micro grant projects in the past, using the revenues from the wind farms and better equipment here in Story County. What you have before you on your agenda is, first of all, acknowledging receipt of four applications that were timely submitted, and then the city of Slater did submit an application past the deadline, and I'll go through the schedule then on how you may deal with that if you choose to accept that. In addition to that, I did lay out the proposed schedule for the next couple months for you to, as a board, to consider funding these applications. It will be a little bit different scheduled in the past few years. And first and foremost, I'm trying to acknowledge a very important election coming up and getting this done so the auditor's office is free. There is a requirement for the auditor to be involved in this process, so I want to make sure that we are done by October or shortly thereafter, beginning of October. And also there are seven additional new wind turbines that are under construction in Story County, and the board may consider adding those to the properties that are TIF. That does require an ordinance amendment because that is part of the code of ordinances. So the four applications that were received were from the City of Collins, City of Story City, City of Cambridge, and City of Huxley. And those applications were with your packet for this morning's consideration. And then the one that did, and all four of those did submit timely applications. City of Slater did submit an application as well and has asked that the board consider receiving that. The schedule that I've laid out today is the acknowledgement of receipt and setting the schedule. Tomorrow, with the notices for the consultation meeting with the taxing entities would be sent out. That taxing entity meeting would be August 2nd. Possibly in the afternoon, and that's something I'd like to discuss. In the past, we've always done it before the Board of Supervisors meeting. With the kind of condensed schedule, I'd like to have the applicants come present to you on that morning of August 2nd and have the taxing entities an opportunity to hear those presentations and then possibly have you all meet with them in the afternoon. That's still to be determined, though, the time frame.
So repeat that again. August 2nd would probably be in the morning and afternoon, so they would come at the regular.
During your normal board meeting is when the applicants would come present.
Okay.
And then the afternoon we would have the consultation.
And that's usually with you and.
And it'd be all the taxing notices would go out too. I had to list it because we might be adding properties. Palestine Township and Ballard School District, Richland Grant Townships and the Vegas School District, Collins Maxwell Baxter School District, City Collins, Collins Township, Roland Story School District, City of Story City, City of Cambridge, City of Huxley, and then Lafayette and Union Township.
And that's everywhere that new wind turbines are going in.
Right.
And then in the past, what we've done, though, we've also included those that are already tipped. So it essentially is every taxing entity in DMAC in Story County.
So my question would be, would it, I like the idea of allowing the other taxing entities to come and hear their presentations if they so choose. Would it be appropriate to just have our consultation meeting almost as part of our morning agenda, just at the end of our morning agenda, where they can come be part of the presentations, hear everything, and then we have an opportunity to kind of debrief with the taxing entities if they choose to come? And
it'd be similar to what you've done with the drainage districts.
Yep, where we would just adjourn as Board of Supervisors, but continue in that consultation meeting.
That's a good solution. Okay. So following that, August 9th, the Code of Iowa sets up some time frames that the taxing entities have an opportunity to provide written comment back to the board. That would be due on August 9th. And on your agenda that day, too, you give some direction to staff as to what projects and what possible funding levels you would like to see incorporated into the urban renewal area plan. And based on that, we start the resolution process for public hearings. On August 16th is when that would be held, the resolution setting a public hearing, and then you would actually take some action to direct staff to put the amended plan, draft amended plan on the website. The way I've set forth the schedule is that date that the City of Slater's request could possibly be considered then by the Board of Supervisors if you so choose. That gives you 2 weeks to reflect on the applications that were received and the timeline. Meeting the required time frame. And
is it appropriate at this time to ask or to have you comment? Did you feel there may be some extenuating circumstances as to why they didn't meet the deadline?
The applicant did indicate that the city later experienced some technical difficulties with their computer system.
So Leanne brought this to me, Wayne, when it came in late, and asked me as chair what I felt should happen, and I said I'd like the board to be able to consider this, but I don't think it's reasonable for the board to consider this in the same way that we're going to consider those applications that came in as they were supposed to.
Okay.
And so that's why it ended up just separated a little bit. I don't intend for them not to get full consideration. I just want to note that it didn't come in when it was supposed to come in, and the other entities did, in fact, send them in as they were supposed to.
We would still incorporate them as part of the taxing entities notice and consultation meeting, but just as I did present them here, keeping them slightly separate, left below the line, and then invite them to that August 16th meeting. Yeah.
So your office wasn't aware of their difficulties until after, July 5th?
Right.
So they made no mention of the fact that they were proposing or at least contacted you that this would be an impediment that going forward that they would be having a late submission?
I received an email from the city later on Friday, July 8th.
That's your first notice that they were wishing to give submission.
Right, and it indicates that they had on and off computer problems, but really just from the 30th to the 5th. And so for me, and we can talk more about this when we get to consideration of what they were requesting, this is problematic. I don't think it eliminates our ability to fully consider it, but I would hate for it to get the same weight of consideration to those entities who traditionally and reliably do what we ask.
Okay. That's right.
Thank you.
Just continuing the schedule, really, when we hit September 13th. And
well, I want to talk more about September 6th because I'm kind of excited about that because theoretically it looks to me like you could have Supervisor Marty Chitty respond to something from Nevada School Board President Marty Chitty, and I just want to see how that would work.
I would probably defer to our Vice President. I would ask that. It's an interesting conundrum, but I think we'll be fine.
Following the notice from the response back to the taxing authorities is when you start public hearings. again, because if you do consider adding additional properties, there will be three considerations to amend the ordinance. Past few years, it's just been the resolution amending the plan. So that does extend the time frame out an additional 3 weeks. But the final date to have everything published and finalized would be October 6th.
And I think you're 100% right in trying to get it done a little earlier this year, just noting that the auditor's office is really going to be covered up for really the month of October leading to Election Day in early November. So.
Are there any questions for me?
No. So this is simply acknowledging that we received these, and I would just add a special note that we're acknowledging receipt of the Slater application, but we are viewing that kind of in its own silo. Do we need a motion to acknowledge, or is it acknowledged?
I think in the past you have done a motion.
All right.
I would make a motion to acknowledge your report to us today.
So moved. Second.
Got a motion and a second. Further discussion? Cheney?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It is acknowledged. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you, Leanne.
Next item is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1705, Bakken Pipeline Easement for Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. It has been it's been over a year and a half that we've been talking about this. I know our conservation department, and I don't know if Mike Cox is here, has done a phenomenal job really considering this and taking a look at what's in Story County's best interest from a conservation point of view, their best interest. The Conservation Board dealt with this on June 27th, where they did, in fact, resolve that the Conservation Board recommends approval of the easement by the Story County Board of Supervisors, and then they laid out some additional requests to the pipeline company. I would just say that the Board of Supervisors took those extra requests really, really seriously and has dug in since June 27th trying to get those extra considerations figured out as far as we can. I do have two people that have requested to speak, and then we may have more. And I'm going to start, Board, with Chad Carter, who has requested to speak to the Board. Chad, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Start with your address and your relationship to the pipeline, if any.
Chad Carter, 4220 East Madison, Des Moines, Iowa. I'm a business agent with the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 234. We run the heavy equipment or operate the heavy equipment on this pipeline. I'm asking you guys for your approval to cross the Heart of Iowa Nature Bike Trail in Story County. As of today, we have put roughly 200 members and residents of Iowa to work on the Dakota Access. With the approval of the easement, we should be able to put another 300 here in the heart of Iowa. Thank you.
Super. Chad, thank you for coming today. Thanks for speaking to us. And the next request is Brett Doblinsky. Brett and I have had a lot of conversations over the last year and a half, and it seemed like a whole lot here recently. Brett, thanks for being here today.
And thank you, Honorable Supervisors. I will apologize and ask your indulgence from the beginning. This may be a longer than usual presentation.
That's okay.
As you alluded, there's a lot of history here, and particularly with Supervisor Chitty coming in the middle of a long process, I want to cover quite a bit of ground. And certainly, if something I don't cover, feel free to ask, or if I get going too long, just give me the signal. Let me start out with just a bit of an update, because I know we get asked questions periodically on what's going on in Story County and how are things. Since the last time I was here, there have been several developments. We now have voluntary easements executed from Iowa State University and all of the Iowa State University-related entities. There are four landowners, private landowners, remaining that we have not acquired land from that we need in Story County. Just to be clear, it's not an overstate. When I say landowners, I count as one if there is an individual that has a land interest and they also are managing, for example, a family trust or an LLC that also has a land interest. So four landowner groups that have not been acquired.
Brent, how many parcels does that four groups of individuals represent? Do you know that?
If I remember correctly, it's six.
Six parcels that you don't have voluntary easements with.
That we do not currently have land rights for.
Okay. So,
as you may be aware, the state is divided for construction purposes into spreads. The spread that Story County is part of, construction has begun. So, if they aren't across the county line, barring weather like today, that will happen soon. So you will start seeing additional activity in the county. But obviously what we are here specifically on today is a relatively narrow piece where we are seeking an easement across Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. As supervisors are aware, this is all part of a route that was approved by the Iowa Utilities Board. We do need to have the county, as the owner of that land, like any other owner, provide us with a right across that. We believe there is another alternative, as with other owners, and that's eminent domain, but that's a place that I don't think any of us would prefer to go if there's a way around it, and I think that there is. And I think, again, I greatly appreciate the County Conservation Board and their recommendation for approval of the voluntary easement.
Yeah, and Brent, I would just say that there is one other option other than going through eminent domain proceedings, which, as you and I have discussed repeatedly, offers some interesting legal questions. The other option is for the pipeline company to simply ship where it intends to cross the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail down to an existing roadway, an existing public roadway, in which case the Board of Supervisors has no authority to issue or not issue any kind of easement. So for me, when I was looking at this, there were kind of multiple balls in the air. It's not as simple as just saying yes or no to one place. There's other options.
Respectfully, from our perspective at this point, with a route approved by the Utilities Board, that route is the option. Our permit is on a very particularly designated path, and we think that at this point that option has been worked out substantially and satisfactorily.
And I'm in complete agreement with you, Brett. The point I'm trying to make is that there are those that believe that Story County ought to use every means at its disposal to basically build a wall, and I know building a wall is a great political catchphrase right now, building a wall on the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, saying, okay, you shall not cross, and all I'm suggesting is that it's not as simple as that. It's not as simple as Story County saying you shall not cross. Legally, it may not hold up, but even if you did go the legal route, at some point, the pipeline company would have the option of redesigning things, I'm sure at great cost, and crossing without any kind of approval from the board.
I am certainly not going to argue with you about the fact that ultimately we believe this will go through. It has been permitted by the highest regulatory authority to permit a pipeline, but I'm trying to set aside a lot of those sort of what-ifs, because we do have a very particular proposal on the table today. And it's a proposal that has a lot of history. Our staffs started working together probably almost 2 years ago. And we have made several changes along the way. So the first round, when we got together and met with the county and engineers and executives, the county attorney's office and representatives of the supervisors had some requests with regard to some easement language, with regard to some insurance language. Conservation Board Director Cox had some concerns about the technical aspects of the crossing. And so we agreed to make those changes in the easement. We also redesigned to go under the trail as opposed to across it. We further agreed to put the boring equipment outside of county property. So it's on private easement to either side. So that equipment won't affect the trail at all. We've made some changes in how we move equipment around to preserve the trail. We have agreed to some flagging and some signage to help better inform users of the trail. And I think all of those were good ideas. Those are all things that we have been able to work with the county conservation on and agree to some of those changes. There have been some other changes along the way that were not as visible or significant, but this has been a process, culminating really, as you mentioned, in the CCD meeting in June, And the resolution where they recommended approval subject to some additional fine-tuning of the insurance language, which we were able to get worked out. And then several additional recommendations, which at the board meeting, I think it was acknowledged those are non-binding, but they were requests to us and they were requests through you.
Absolutely.
And the supervisors asked us to make sure that we followed up on those, and I want to assure you that, that we have, and I want to talk a little bit about those requests. Several of them had to do with assurances that we were going to use best practices for environmental aspects, for safety of the pipeline, and those we absolutely can assure the county. We had made some voluntary agreements at the Utilities Board during the permitting. They go above and beyond what's required by an already extensive set of federal safety rules. We have had to work with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and we have approval from them for all the environmental attributes that are under their control. In the Utilities Board, and I know that the three of you weren't present. It was a long 3.5 weeks in Boone, Iowa. But there was expert testimony from opponents, from neutral parties like the Consumer Advocate, from Dakota Access, and, of course, the board has its own expert safety and engineering staff. And there were tables of, you know, here are how we're going to cross various landforms. Here is how we're going to cross various water forms. And those things were extensively hashed out. I just want to give some assurance that these were not sort of rash decisions or, you know, however you decide to build it, you can build it. We made some additional agreements. The board then imposed some additional requirements yet. I provided a letter that I'll talk about more in a minute that has as an attachment a table that we provided at the board's request comparing some of the voluntary commitments before the board added on to those as they compare to federal pipeline regulation and show where we were going above and beyond. And the board was ultimately satisfied with that, and I certainly hope that, that this board is as well. So the easy ones are the general requests from conservation that we keep to their bailiwick, conservation in mind, and that we do what we can to be good stewards. And I am pleased to make those assurances. The other category was a request that Dakota Access, they referred to directionally bore. There are actually, that sort of overlaps two different techniques, boring and directional drilling, under all of the water crossings in Story County. And I want to give the assurance that we also took that very seriously, and I think many representatives of the county are aware, you know, we had surveyed the contours of the stream channels and the banks, and we compared those to overhead photography of where the tree lines and tree growths are, and for both practical reasons and advisability reasons, Dakota Access is not willing to agree to bore or drill all those water crossings. I want to make clear that that was not something that we just dismissed out of hand. Let me talk first about the advisability reasons. And unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of opportunity to talk about this with CCD, so I certainly do respect that this is an area of expertise for them. But a lot of our concern is that almost all these crossings are on private property, most of which we already have acquired the land for. Most of them are used for farming purposes. When you do a bore or a drill, I think there's often a misunderstanding that, well, you're going under the surface, so there won't be as much disruption. The problem is that actually getting under the surface and using the equipment to get under the surface has a disruption all its own. And when you get to a certain depth, that disruption becomes extremely significant. So if you take an example of a 40-foot deepest point of a stream bed, and then we bore our commitment, even though this is above and beyond any safety requirements, we've committed to the Utilities Board and all the landowners that we will go 60 inches beneath a water channel. So for a, you know, for a 40-foot bottom point on a bed, it's 45 feet under. The equipment then has to go about 2 feet under that, so you're about 47 feet down. And to get the equipment into that hole, which is now 4.5 stories deep, that hole has to be engineered, right? Both for practical reasons and for OSHA reasons, you can't have that collapsing. So you have to have at least a 2-to-1 slope ratio on each of the walls. So all of a sudden that 40-foot depth requires a hole that is 135 feet on each side as a square. That is a massive hole at 45 feet deep. You've got to segregate that soil. You've got to put that soil somewhere. You also then have to get the pipe, which is not flexible, lined up in that hole. So you have a narrower strip coming out on the non-water body side that you're also impacting, and you're digging a deep hole to get that lined up on a piece of equipment that's 47 feet deep. So the footprint for that sort of activity on the farmland side is extensive. And we actually think that more environmentally disruptive and detrimental than simply using a traditional surface-based open cut process for most waterways. And again, there were a table of these water crossings at the utilities board. We're talking about the pros and cons of different approaches, and you know, part of what was approved in the route was a table of where we would drill or bore and where we wouldn't, and we had to give some of these same explanations, although in much better engineering detail than this lawyer is capable of giving, as part of that hearing. So that's the advisability concern. The practicality concern, it's unfortunate, although I think the advisability issue would have been the same, that request from the CCD didn't come up at an earlier stage of working the process. We special order the pipe to our specifications. We ordered that about a year ago, and we certainly did order some extra of the thicker walled pipe that can withstand the strains of being pushed and pulled through a bore or a drill. But there just simply is not enough of that type of pipe available in any reasonable time frame to add the number or the linear feet of additional boring that is being talked about, even for a handful of the crossings in Story County. So you've got, you know, issues of private property and the negotiations and expectations of the farmers that have that. You've got some timeline and some material availability issues that collectively, as we looked at it, is just not a request that we can agree to comply with. Having said that, we certainly understand where the Conservation Board is coming from. I have to switch from my let's have a lovely conversation to my lawyer hat for just a second and sort of reserve some rights here. I want to make very clear as I'm saying this. Part of why those were requests and only requests is, again, the issue in front of the board is actually a very specific, narrow issue. And legally, we certainly would not concede that there is any authority to tie these unrelated elements to this specific, easement crossing. So having said that, let me go back to the happier part of the talk. We looked at it and said, you know, what can we do? Normally our easements are 125 to 150 feet over open land for temporary construction work. Once construction is done, the permanent pipeline easement is 50 feet. What we had already done all along the route is when we go through forested areas, we throttle that easement width down to 85 feet for the temporary construction. We still need the 50 as a permanent easement for the pipeline. But what that switch from 150 or 125 down to 85 does is it preserves, obviously, about 50% more trees going through. The trade-off from our perspective for that is what that extra construction space is for is soil segregation. Obviously, that's a concern of the Conservation Board, too. It's a huge concern of the farming community. It was a really, quite possibly, the largest issue in the Utilities Board was for ag land, how we make sure that we handle the protection and restoration. So one thing we have to do when we narrow that down is we can't do the segregation piles at that location anymore. So now they have to be trucked out of the forest and back out to the nearest open area where we try and get a little additional land on top of our usual easements to bring that out segregated. So we will still very carefully segregate the soils and follow all the proper routines for that, but there is an additional cost and difficulty on our part to foregoing the wider clear. The absolute minimum we can have cleared over the pipeline for aerial safety inspections and for access for routine maintenance and things is 30 feet. Normally we do that only in wetland areas, not in upland areas. By a letter that we sent to the county last night and based on some discussions that we had with various representatives of the county, we are willing to commit that if we get this easement, that we will address as best we can those forested water crossing areas by agreeing to go down to only 30 feet maintained clear. We still would need the 50 feet legal easement, you know, in the event something unforeseen would come up. But we will keep clear at only 30 feet of that, which adds, again, another 40% that is allowed to revegetate, to regrow in the forest when we're done. The other thing that we decided would be appropriate, often when there are situations like this where there is an ecological impact that is inevitable, right? You're putting a new piece of infrastructure in, that there is some sort of compensatory action, right? So if anyone is familiar, for example, with Wetland Reserve Program, federal WRP program, if an electric transmission line, for example, takes a WRP easement, they have to provide a land swap, right? They have to find and acquire suitable land that then gets put in the program instead. Similarly, I don't know that the county does it, but a lot of cities, when you do greenfield subdivision development, the subdivision developers have a dedication requirement. They have to dedicate park space. And if it's not practical to do it there, they can, for example, if there's a nearby city park that's going to be used by that subdivision, they can pay for improvements, right, in lieu of their dedication. We've had to do that with the Fish and Wildlife Service, where as we went through FWS areas, we had to provide a compensatory amount into a conservation fund for the Fish and Wildlife Service's other goals. And so, based on those models, it seemed appropriate that if we couldn't give precisely what was being asked, that in the interest of being a good citizen and a good steward and working with the conservation effort, that we are willing to make a commitment to do something in lieu of exactly what the County Conservation Board wanted for the water crossing. So the other thing you'll find in the letter that we had, which I refer to as a commitment letter, is we will commit that within 30 days of having all of the necessary permits from the county, that we will provide a compensatory payment to the county for conservation purposes. Our understanding, and I think this is great because it actually ties to the real issue here, which is the trail. One of the only bullet point I didn't mention in the CCB's resolution was we want to be able to pave, and we want your assurance we can pave. You know, we want to work with you on any work you're doing directly over the pipeline for everybody's safety and benefit. But absolutely, we understand that your interest would be to pave that. We have no intention to interfere with that. Our understanding is that there is a priority section that is about 4 miles. That's sort of indirect information from Conservation Director Cox. We are willing to make a commitment to fund the paving of that 4 mile priority segment up to a contribution of $1.6 million. And obviously, we calculate that on the basis of that paving project, but there are no earmarks on that. The county ultimately can use that however it wants. We understand that. But our hope is that because it's meant to be sort of an in lieu of a conservation activity, that it goes to a similar purpose, something within the bailiwick of the conservation effort. So that's a thumbnail sketch of the long history of this. It's our concerns with doing anything other than passing the easement. You've talked about the fact that, you know, that might involve some legal action. We certainly hope not, but I don't think we would have much choice left if after 2 years of working on this, we can't get to yes on it. We have made what we think are responsible changes throughout the process, and so this last round of commitments to try and address as best as possible, even though, frankly, the CCD had already recommended without these commitments that you approve the easement. And those commitments are reaffirmation specifically to this county that we will use best practices in our own conservation and stewardship, that we will narrow to the absolute minimum our crossing through the trees, and that we will make this dedication to another conservation priority in lieu of doing exactly what the CCB requested on the crossings. And frankly, one advantage of that, most of these crossings, and I understand the public certainly benefits from from the forested areas there, but in terms of actual short-term enjoyment of those, almost all those are on private property. So doing a project in lieu of those that involves the bike trail is something that is much more publicly available and publicly enjoyable in exchange for that. Obviously, we think that the infrastructure has benefits. The utilities board found it has benefits, including to Story County. We know there are those who take a different view and see this as a burden on the county. And we certainly hope that providing a public benefit gives this board some solace that we take seriously those concerns and that we're trying to be a good citizen. With that, if there are no questions, we certainly appreciate the work of this board, of your attorney staff, of the County Conservation Board, with whom we've all been able to work very well for the last 2 years. Hopefully we are now in the final stretch, and I would appreciate passage of the easement for the CCD's recommendation.
Well, Brett, thank you very much for coming and giving that presentation. It has been a fascinating, sometimes trying process. I know I learned more about the difference between boring and drilling and digging than I ever thought I would. I have appreciated. I know that you and I have not always seen eye to eye on what was happening and where we're going, but I've appreciated knowing that you were working as hard as you could to get where you could go as a representative of the pipeline company. Hopefully you know that I was doing exactly the same in my role as chair of the Board of Supervisors. I want to just reiterate, this board, with me as the chair and the representative in this case, took not only the recommendation that we pass the resolution from our conservation board very seriously, we also took their additional requests, and they were requests, very seriously, and I appreciate that you guys were able to agree to all but one of those, and further appreciate that we tried to find some kind of common ground of how we would address the one that you guys didn't feel like you could get to, how that could still benefit the people of Story County. So thank you very much. I mean, it's been a hard slog to get to this point, but I appreciate the work you put in. Questions for Brett?
Not really a question, but more of a comment, and I would be remiss if I didn't certainly thank you, Rick, for your role in taking the request that was presented from the Conservation Board for the benefit of some of the other members of the audience and so forth. I served on the Conservation Board since 2004, and just recently in the last 2 years became a non-voting member and so forth, and to understand the thoroughness by which the Conservation Board takes not only the heart of our major trail serious, they take all land acquisition and areas of environmentally sensitive areas in Story County as a high priority. And I would also be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the outstanding work of Mike Cox, our director, not only in working with the board, but also working with the pipeline through this area and specifically through the heart of our nature trail. I think the county attorney staff and your efforts has brought us to a clearer understanding of the challenges that the pipeline faced, as well as our concern for environmental protection and safeguards to the best of our ability as this project potentially moves forward. And those things, in my opinion, would not happen had you not taken the lead to represent us and continuing to work in that regard. And also, I reached out to Director Cox, sharing with him some of the proposals that you had referenced in your letter to us that we received, acknowledging the additional things. And my concern primarily there was to make sure that the Conservation Board and its Board of Directors had an opportunity, if they had some concerns or some questions, we would hear about it prior to having to make a decision today. And again, I want to thank Mike for sending an email out to the best of his ability, kind of highlighting that since he wasn't privy to the final discussions and so forth. But at the end of the day, I think what's important for the public to understand is that this was a long, collaborative process. Each group had special interests, special concerns. We also need to acknowledge the strong concerns of our community, our citizens, the environmental concerns that have been lodged throughout this process. You know, having people committed towards environmentally sensitive safeguards is what makes our county and this country a better place for everybody. We may not always agree on the final decision, but we should always be respectful and willing to hear all sides of a given issue and then try to work for the common good to the best of our ability. So there's a lot of thank yous that I think this board certainly wants to acknowledge, and I think that this process in itself has certainly helped me be a lot more comfortable than as we move forward. So thank you.
Marty, any questions?
Well, I would share Wayne's observations, but I come at it from the ground up, not from the top down. I appreciate the opportunities to meet individually with you as my board members. I thank Mike Cox, who had, in no small way has been bringing me up to speed as my short time here on the board. I had seen this issue as just something that you would read in the paper or watch on television. Now I'm here in a decision-making process, and it's been kind of I've been whipsawed by that, which is in motion here. No small thanks to the attorney's office, who has been at our side answering our questions to the best of their abilities and giving direction in how things work out against each other. I understand the dynamic in place with the utility boards rendering up a decision that the county is kind of constrained on the touches that they can place upon this project. I think that we are in a position right now with the mitigating offer on the paving of the trail is noteworthy and appreciated. We are in a position that we have taken into account the boards, the conservation boards' wants and wishes, and we have seen to the best of our ability to be impactful, go to a place that I think we have time to make a resolution and offer up a vote. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we're to the point of consideration. But
just before we do so, I just want to certainly give Director Cox an opportunity. I know he didn't sign up to say anything. He doesn't need to say anything, but I would certainly like to at least extend that.
Well, and I was going to open it up broader than Mike Cox before we consider this. And, of course, Mike, you're always welcome. Your work on this has been unbelievable. But I want to open it up to anybody. If there's anybody else who would like to speak to us before we consider, yeah, Linda. I kind of had a suspicion, Linda, that you might want to say something. Brett, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary.
That's the first time I've ever called that.
Yeah, remember this moment.
Can I record that for my kids?
Thank you.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Start back. Thank you.
My name is Linda Merkin, and I'm speaking today as a private citizen. I think I have some questions for the supervisors to see what you heard just now from Mr. Linsky. I heard an offer that Dakota Access would fund $1.6 million to pay 4 miles of the trail. Did you hear that that was contingent upon the board approving this easement request, or that would be given to Story County regardless of what the board did? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I can tell you exactly what I heard.
Okay.
Because it's in the letter.
Okay, no, I didn't have a chance to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, we just received it. Dakota Access believes it's appropriate to make a contribution in mitigation of any conservation impacts it may make in Story County. While it cannot accommodate the CCB request, Conservation Board, request to modify its construction techniques to preserve all trees on private lands, in addition to minimizing its footprint in forest areas, Dakota Access will also donate and provide a public benefit that is relevant to the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, since it is the actual matter before the supervisors. Specifically, Dakota Access will, no later than 30 days after obtaining the fully executed Heart of Iowa Nature Trail easement and all of Story County floodplain permits, make a contribution of $1.6 million to cover that.
So the donation is contingent upon the board approving the permit.
I'm viewing it as consideration for crossing our Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and recognizing that we want to improve our Heart of Iowa Nature Trail.
Okay, that's what I heard. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you for reading it. I know what I heard.
Yep.
Second, these waterways may be bordered by private property, but my understanding is that several of them would be considered navigable waterways. And I don't know if that has been looked into in terms of what Dakota Access can do blocking a navigable waterway.
In either case, it wouldn't reside with the Board of Supervisors. Right, if it's a navigable waterway and you're making that case, then it would reside either with the Corps of Engineers or somebody at FEMA or somebody at the federal level.
Okay.
Yep.
I think there are navigable waterways. Mm-hmm. Okay. The third is, I did hear that Dakota Access would pursue legal action against the county if you did not approve this permit. Correct?
I think that I believe that Dakota Access has maintained all the way through that it is their intent to build a pipeline, and if that means going to using the legal process to build the pipeline, that's exactly what I think you could expect.
Those were just three questions I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Did you get them? Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to address the board? I see Mike up. Mike, it's been a hard process, man. You've done a nice job.
Well, good morning, and thank you. Thank you to Dakota Access Pipeline staff and representatives for working with us. You know, you're absolutely right. This is one of those issues that, you know, when it first came up, the Conservation Board said, well, you know, we got our antenna pointed in this direction and concerned. You know, the Conservation Board is very serious about its role as being an advocate for environmental resources in the county, or our own natural resources. Water quality is just one of the many that we're concerned about. Soil quality, soil health, etc. Not to mention our own properties and managing those properties as best we can and those recreational resources as best we can. So, you know, commend the Conservation Board on taking those charges very seriously and doing what they can to implement or to try to facilitate proper stewardship of our resources in the county. So I think that they, you know, they know their role, and I think that they took that action through the resolution that they could take to best implement or facilitate what they can in regard to our resources. you know, water quality, as you're well aware, is one of the primary concerns of our state right now, something we take very seriously. So it's the extent that we can implement or try to encourage the pipeline to be very cognizant of the impacts of that project on potential water quality concerns and environmental concerns, and that's what the Conservation Board wanted to accomplish. So they made those recommendations via a resolution to the board. Also considering, of course, the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and the recreational capacity there, and the fact that many of our remnant, or I should say native vegetation or native prairies are along those old railroads. That land hasn't been disturbed, and so in most of the county, we see a good percentage of our remnant areas that's where they're located along those. And so we're particularly concerned about that. And so we applaud the efforts of the pipeline to bore under the trail in that location, and certainly appreciate that. I guess we really appreciate then the Board of Supervisors hearing those concerns and taking those concerns to heart and doing, just as the Conservation Board, has certain authorities and certain parameters which it can act on. We appreciate that the Board of Supervisors also fully utilize those abilities in bringing this kind of difficult situation to resolve. We all know that there's opponents and proponents, and at the end of the day, all we can do is say, we did we did the best thing we could for the county, and in specific here to our resources. So having said that, I just appreciate the board taking it, board supervisors here taking this seriously.
Yeah, well, and we did, and you got to see firsthand how seriously we took it. I said at the Conservation Board meeting, so I attended the Conservation Board meeting on the 27th, and I said then, and I want to say now, I believe that our Conservation Board and our Conservation Director, as the representative of that board, handled this situation exactly like you guys are supposed to. You are in charge of conservation in Story County. I think the questions you raised, the concerns that you guys had and continue to have are very real and proper. And, it's been a really nice conversation between Brett and I today, but I think it's fair to say that Brett doesn't necessarily view Story County or Story County Conservation as easy to work with. I mean, we're a pain in the butt. There's no question about it, and we have been on multiple occasions. I'm greatly appreciative that you've been willing to work with us to try to figure these things out. But, Mike, I just want to underscore, you and your board have done exactly what you're supposed to do to get here. You've raised the exact right concerns. Hopefully the Board of Supervisors has done the same thing. We have a little different role than conservation does in all this. And so I just want to thank you for your work in really trying hard to protect Story County from a conservation point of view. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to address the board? You want to come up? Sure.
Laura Solson, 1705 Buchanan Drive, Inc. I have a question, and I think this is probably for Rick. Did you have an opportunity to talk to Steve Holmes about possible litigation if they...
Yes.
Okay. And was there any estimation of cost or position that you could share with us that wouldn't be confidential? Because I know that that's an attorney-client privilege, but...
I'm going to say no, and I'll check into it and see what, if anything, from that conversation is appropriate to share.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That works.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else wishing to address the board? Okay, seeing no one else, board is to us.
I would move resolution 1705 to approve the pipeline easement for the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail with the acknowledgement of the letter conditional, commitment, of the acknowledgement of the commitment letter from the pipeline
that was presented by Brett for today.
I would second that.
Motion and a second. Further discussion?
No, again, I just think this has truly been an educational opportunity to fully understand the complexity of something of this nature. And when you realize that the final decisions and so forth rest with a different body, and I think it's important that citizens understand, and maybe that's why in government certain kinds of things are done by a special commission or boards, because oftentimes supervisors are directly connected to the people and will receive a great deal of communication pro or con on a lot of the decisions that come before us, whether we have any authority or not any authority. But I think that because the nature of government is to give regulatory authority to special commissions, it has probably alleviated the, in my opinion, the concern that sometimes interested groups or small factions of people with strong concerns could sway the ultimate decision of elected bodies, elected boards. And so if you look at whether we're talking federal regulations or state regulations, this is true, and I was going to report a little bit later. One of the ongoing issues today has to do with EPA at the federal level and its outreach and regulations. And so there's always going to be advocacy groups out there that are concerned about entities that are established to determine how things are going to basically happen. And I believe that that's a good process. But from our standpoint, I think it was important for me personally and as any board, and I hope that this is true of all my supervisors from around the state where they've had a chance to work with the pipeline, is that they really try to look at this in terms of what their role and responsibilities were, and yet allow for the public to be able to share its concern and its views, and then give the utility board all of the information that it had received in allowing them to arrive at whatever decision they were going to make. So for me personally, I think that the process, while the outcome may not be exactly what some people like, it was structured in such a way that the authority oftentimes is taken away from the local level and put in the hands of a agency that is designed to handle these kinds of things. And I think people need to understand the dynamics of how these
Absolutely.
Things happen.
Yeah, thank you, Wayne. Anything further?
No. I would have to say, just as a recently private citizen, that as I come to the decision-making process, would be the great or small, and I'd say this is a great one, that you get left with the impression as you come in that you, if you're a supervisor in Story County, you have the ability to be impactful and have render up determinations what happens in Story County. And I think Wayne alluded to it pretty well, that we do not always have that case, that the things are handed to us, and this is one of those decisions. I think we have done a yeoman's work in nuancing it into a position that we will make the county better in a tangible way going forward. I understand and I accept the concerns of the people that may not necessarily see that this is a good thing going forward, but once again, from this chair, from this board, you do not have the choice to stop this. And so, I turn it back to the chair.
All right. We're ready to vote. Clinton?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1705 passes. Thank you very much. Let's see. No agency reports, no other reports. Public forum number 2 is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments. Wayne, anything?
Not on the liaison, no.
Marty, anything?
Had a very informative and constructive meeting with Keith and Melissa down in emergency management yesterday, and look forward to moving to that committee assignment, and they have some actionable things that they wish to do in the county here going forward. I will be participating in.
And outstanding.
I look forward to that.
Good. Announcement, Wayne.
Before we get to the announcement, just a committee update. You remember I mentioned last board meeting that I would be going to the seat committee, which was the it's an agency set up by the Secretary of State dealing with the election administration training. It was a very interesting meeting. What's unusual in this meeting is that the Secretary of State actually sits on this board as a voting member.
And has a staff member.
And has two staff members. There are seven members on this board, and we got into some interesting discussions regarding the 2080 agreement, the voting membership, and at the end of the day, no definite decisions were made, but just so that you are aware, the Secretary of State did bring a proposal to the board to maybe look at equalizing the voter representation. Out of the seven members, it appears that the counties have a majority. There are four representatives of the county, which means that the ISACA board is made up of county auditors from the various counties, and myself, who is appointed by the Iowa State Association of Counties Board of Directors. And so one of the proposals would be is to eliminate one of those positions as a voting member, which in this case would be the ISAC Board of Directors representative, and make it a six-member voting board. I raised some questions about what happens in the case of a tie, and they assured me that it took a two votes for anything to pass, which would usually be quarterly or every couple months. So again, there would be a delay in finalizing any action if it was a six-person board. Then the question came to the 2080. Currently, the Iowa State Association County's Board of Directors is a part of the 2080. ISACA, the Iowa State Association of County Auditors, and the Secretary of State's office. So my concern was, as representing the Iowa State Association of Counties board, is that if you want to remove that body as a voting member, then why should they be a member of the 2080? Because they don't have a voice. And so that was an interesting discussion to take place. What is going to happen is there will be further discussions. In talking to Bill Peterson, our executive director, he believes that if the Auditors Association, which goes under the acronym of ISACA, brings forth a recommendation that ISAC board becomes a non-voting member, like a liaison to the board, then they would take it under consideration. But I think that there was at least enough discussion around the table to make this a worthwhile process. I was informed by Lucy Martin at the auditors' meeting last week this topic did not come up, nor did it come up by the executive board. So I think there's probably a lot of things that they want to think about and talk about, but at some point we may hear that the current 2080 agreement is going to end in September of this year. So if they make if there's no decision made, then they're either going to recommend a one-year extension to try to resolve this with the three members still being present in the 2080, or it will be a decision made to perhaps remove ISAC Board of Directors and then just have those two entities there. But at no time was this a mandate from the Secretary of State. It was just a preference. Mm-hmm. He just felt that by moving in this direction, it put the Secretary of State's office and the auditors on an equal footing rather than the counties having a majority membership.
Okay. So keep right on going with announcements if you've got any.
Okay. Announcements, I will be missing the board meeting next Tuesday. I will be attending the National Association of Counties annual meeting in Long Beach, California. On Saturday and Sunday, I will also be serving on the NACO's Environmental Energy and Land Use Steering Committee. Again, we still have some major challenges with the EPA and its overreach in several of the other areas, along with, I think I got a 90-page document, and I decided not to download it all yesterday, that we will be considering several resolutions and options as we move forward, understanding that it's the annual conferences that actually approves what was voted on at the legislative conference, and that will be our charge then to take that to Capitol Hill and lobby over the next year for certain rules and regulations that are going to be passed. There is Johnson County has a supervisor also that serves on that board, so we do have at least two members from Iowa. We did have three, but one from Humboldt County is no longer there that served on the NACO board. So.
Well, we appreciate your representing us at those meetings. Any announcements, Marty?
None.
Just proof that nothing is ever easy. We had an automobile strike at the Community Life Building this morning at about 1 a.m. An apparent drunk driver who didn't think that was enough thought they would also be texting. And so did some damage to the Community Life Building, which those of you that are following knows we're right at the end of having that sold. So nothing's ever easy. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.